This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled this afternoon to be joined by Reese Jackson. Reese is the CEO of the Chesapeake Regional Medical Center. Chesapeake, I've got to try and pronounce that correctly. Reese, can you take a moment to introduce yourself? Then we'll talk to you about the health system, priorities, leadership, and more. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Thanks, Scott. So Chesapeake Regional Healthcare is an organization that serves the city of Chesapeake, southwestern portions of Southwest Virginia Beach, Northeast North Carolina, and other portions of Southampton Roads. We serve a population of a little over 500,000 people, and I've been the CEO here for the past 3 years.
And can you talk to us a little bit about the health system and maybe a few points of pride in the health system?
You know, I think a number of things. I would begin with our heritage. You know, we are a non-state-owned public hospital. So we are a creature of the state statute, the Chesapeake Hospital Authority Act. Virginia is a COPN state. Going back to the late 1960s, early 1970s, when the city of Chesapeake, which is a relatively new city, was formed, there was a grassroots effort by local leaders, local physicians, to develop a hospital. You know, other hospitals in the area didn't want Chesapeake to develop a hospital, so there were advocacy efforts made at the state level, and that's how we came to be. Because of the COPN process, not being able to get it approved through that process, it was created by an act of the General Assembly. And, you know, that independence continues with us today. We're one of the few, organizations across the country that hasn't joined a larger healthcare system. So that heritage, that began with, a source of community pride still continues today as a source of community pride. So I have to begin with our heritage.
Which is fantastic. And I'll come back to the points of pride in a second. We have on the podcast so many large systems and so many still independent systems. And there's still a lot of them. And what's the prognosis? Can a system like Chesapeake stay independent for the long run? How do you sort of look at that strategically? And how do you look at that into fitting into community need and what you're trying to accomplish?
So in our instance, yes, we can. I think if you look across the country and you ask, why have other hospitals joined other large health systems? And there's probably a multitude of reasons, but three come to mind for me. One is IT. IT is expensive, and if you can piggyback on a larger organization's IT platform, that's something you have to consider. The other thing is managed care contracting. There's no doubt that a larger system can negotiate rates better than a smaller hospital. So I think those are two of the bigger drivers. I think the other thing, though, is also the services that you provide. Can you provide a high enough level of tertiary services to continue to be independent, or are you going to be a community hospital and thus need a larger tertiary partner to be, a partner with? So in our instance, we have great demographics, and we can evolve, and we have a growing community. So we're well positioned to be independent, and frankly, given our particular market characteristics, we really have no other choice. I mean, Sentara has a large market share, and the community needs us to provide a healthy choice. So I feel like it's an imperative for us. But I think across the country, it's more difficult, for independents if they don't have good demographics, the ability to, develop tertiary services. But we're fortunate.
Let me let you finish the first question, and thank you for that. That's helpful, and it's a really evolving issue, particularly in the COVID era, is who can stay independent, who can't. Take a moment on a few more thoughts on points of pride in the system beyond its great love for independence and its heritage of independence and how it started. Talk a bit about the points of pride in the system, and then I'm going to ask you about your leadership journey. You've had a full career and how you ended up here and how it's evolved and so forth, but start with few points of pride in the Chesapeake system?
Well, so building off the heritage and, you know, built for and by the community. So that's still with us today. You know, we are all about the community. You know, we want to make money so that we can reinvest in our community. So that is what we are all about. We serve a growing population. The things that I'm really particularly proud of is my team. I have an incredible team, my executive team, my mid-level management team, our employees. You know, the way that we responded to the COVID crisis has been phenomenal. I know a lot of hospitals can say that, and they should say it. You know, in our particular instance, the last 45 days within the Commonwealth of Virginia, Chesapeake Regional has had the most COVID patients each of the last 45 days. So who would have ever thought, you know, a standalone hospital, 310 beds, would have a greater number of COVID patients than Sentara Norfolk General, you know, Inova Fairfax, you know, Carilion, UVA, VCU. I mean, it's been remarkable how the team here has responded. And clinically, our outcomes have been fantastic.
Take a moment on that issue. How did you end up with the most COVID patients? How does that happen that your area ends up or you end up so inundated with them? And how did you handle that?
Well, so that's, you know, the hot spot in the beginning was in the more dense area, you know, Northern Virginia and Inova Fairfax in particular. And the other hospitals in Northern Virginia were all inundated with patients to begin with. You know, the last couple of months, you know, it's Eastern Virginia where we are. So, you know, the number of COVID patients has increased across the board. You know, that includes Bon Secours Mercy and the Sentara system at large here. So we've just had a lot of community spread here recently. We've been out there now trying to, you know, convince people to do the right thing. Wash your hands, wear your mask, socially distance, don't be in large crowds, especially if you're younger. You know, so and it's making a difference. Our census had been up in the mid-70s, and now it's back down to the mid-40s. So, and that just happened in the last 7 days. So, so I really don't know how to explain it, you know, from hotspot to hotspot, other than, you know, it's a disease that can spread very quickly if you're not, you know, disciplining yourself. So, but the way that we respond to it, frankly, is, you know, we, you know, within the organization, you know, we have what are known as cold zones, warm zones, hot zones. So we triage patients, whether they are known to have it or we suspect that they have it. So, you know, if we suspect they have it, you know, they go into the warm zone until we know that they have it, then they go into the hot zone. So it's just the whole kind of clinical algorithm working with our, you know, nurses and physicians. And it's a daily effort. It's a daily effort. And, you know, we continue to be busy with non-COVID patients. So, you know, it's balancing everything that's can be tenuous from time to time, especially when you're at that peak. And so it can be challenging at times.
Well, thank goodness that when it gets to these peaks, at some point it does tend to peak and move in the right direction. So if not, it just wouldn't be sustainable, it seems. Let me ask you a different question, Reese. And obviously, I keep on cutting you off in terms of the top few things that you're particularly proud of. Let me ask you about your career journey and so forth. And then as part of that question, if you could work in a couple more thoughts on, you've talked about your team, you've talked about the response to COVID. If you could also work in, you know, what else you look at and say, look, this is what we do and why we're so important as a community asset. Whatever else it is that you're really proud of would be fantastic. And I'd appreciate it, Reese.
Okay, sure. So in terms of my own career, you know, I'm from Lubbock, Texas. Yeah, I grew up in West Texas. My dad was a school superintendent. My older brother was a physician. and my mom had an aneurysm when I was 16. So the reason I became a healthcare executive is because of those life events. My dad being a community leader, wanting to be kind of like my dad, you know, my brother being kind of the benchmark that my parents held me up to, and having an interest in medicine, and then that responding to my mom, you know, I'm the one that took her to the emergency room. You know, I'm the one that basically had two moms, the mom, you know, leading up to the day and the mom after that day, because, you know, her life was affected by that. Fortunately, she lived, you know, saved by the hands of a neurosurgeon and my prayers. So, you know, that's for me, my mission, my job is a calling, and it goes back to that early time in my life. I had the good fortune of being introduced to people who took an interest in me. So, you know, when I was at Texas Tech, I was very involved in, you know, campus activities. The dean of students introduced me to a local hospital administrator, and he ultimately became a mentor of mine. So I cut my teeth in Lubbock with what was part of the St. Joseph Health System. You know, I had a career with the St. Joseph Health System in the corporate office in Orange and a hospital in Santa Rosa. You know, I ultimately made my way to back to Corpus Christi, worked with the Spawn System, part of Incarnate Word, later part of Christus. And I did a variety of jobs there, and that was really kind of my Hamburg moment. You know, that's where I developed most of my skills, you know, working my guts out in Corpus Christi. And then I ended up being the number two person in Tulsa at the St. Francis System, which is an incredible organization. I ended up being the number two person for the Valley Health System in Virginia. And then my time in Pittsburgh was phenomenal, you know, being part of that journey from West Penn Allegheny Health System to Allegheny Health Network, and, you know, Highmark becoming our new parent company. It was just an incredible, very rich experience. And then ending up here to run my own show. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, the nomadic career that I've taken, you know, as a kind of have gun, will travel executive. But in every place that I've been there a fair number of years, and I've gotten to, you know, is so, you know, even though I've traveled a lot, I've also lived a lot, and, you know, and enjoyed each place and taken something from it and hopefully left something behind. And so, you know, that's it in a nutshell. That's why I do what I do. That's where I've been. And, you know, I think, and, you know, just going back to your question, you know, what are the things that I'm proud of too? So, you know, as an executive, you've got to believe that planning drives budget, drives operations. You have to have a very strong planning process. Then you have to budget accordingly, and then you have to implement. So when I talk about my team and what I'm proud of them, I'm proud that they are implementers. They're doers. So, you know, they have a can-do attitude. So, you know, some of the things that we're doing, I'm very proud of. You know, we didn't stop in the midst of this COVID. We're spending $125 million right now on our campus. We didn't stop. You know, we didn't say stop the construction when Governor Northam said, stop your elective cases. We didn't stop. We didn't panic. You know, we held the course, and we plugged along doing what we knew that we had to do, because we're here to serve present and future generations. So I'm very proud of this, you know, community spirit, this can-do attitude. I'm very proud of the things that we do on this campus. I'm proud of the things that we do off this campus. The things that we're going to do on this campus the next few years, we're focusing on our oncology program. We're building a new cancer center. We're going to renovate our mother baby unit eventually to have private rooms, because we serve over 3,000 moms per year. You know, we are planning to have an open heart program. We've got to continue to get through a COPN process, but someday we will be successful. We're building a critical care tower with 90 new beds, and that is what it's all about right now. When you look at the COVID situation, a fair number of people end up in the ICU, and we're here to take care of them, and we've done a remarkable job, and someday we'll be even better equipped to do so. And then we're focusing on our comprehensive neuroscience program. You know, we're pursuing accreditation this year to be a comprehensive stroke center, and we're well on our way towards that. And in the midst of doing all of these things on our campus, we're also prioritizing things off of our campus too. So our campus is our community. It's not just where the hospital is. It's where all the populations and subpopulations live, where we serve, and we know them very well. So Medicaid expansion is important to us. We're not here just to serve, you know, commercial members. We're here to serve all people. So we have a focus on, you know, on certain populations that have higher chronicity, and we're out there in the community, and we're providing services where they live, and we're trying to help them with their health status. And our readmission rates here are very low. So some of the efforts that we've made, we have tangible evidence that, you know, our outreach efforts from a population health perspective are working. So I could go on and on about the different things I'm proud of here. There's an unlimited list. It's almost hard to answer the question. There's so many things I'm proud of. We're also working currently on a behavioral health COPN request. So to add, you know, 20 new inpatient behavioral health beds, I'm very proud of how people are working together in this process to achieve what I know will ultimately be approved and implemented and will make a difference to people's lives. So I think ultimately that is what it's all about. You're out here to serve people because you want to make a difference in their lives. Yesterday was one of the best days that I had this week. Yesterday I got a phone call from a woman who called me to say, I just want to say thank you for saving my life. I said, can you tell me a little bit more why about your story? She said, I was your first COVID patient. I said, really? That's remarkable. And so we had a nice conversation. I'm going to have lunch with her and her family next week.
It's a magnificent situation, just magnificent. Reese, it's magnificent. Bold leadership. I love the leadership concept of, look, COVID is a serious problem. We're dealing with it head on, but we are not stopping everything else that we're doing. And more and more, you get clarity from leaders that is the approach they're taking. It is important. We have to deal with COVID, and we have to deal with everything else. Because if not, we're not serving our mission for the long run and the short run for everything else too. And so
You have to compete, you know, but you have to compete for the right reasons and in the right ways, you know. So, you know, competition is a good thing. You know, I'm glad that there's this Sentara Health System. You know, that's who we have to compete with, but we have to compete in the right way and to do the right things. And you know, really, what is strategic planning all about anyway? It's trying to figure out, What is it the community needs that relative to what you can provide? So sometimes you have to develop so that you can respond and, you know, respond to that. But it's a continuous process. And really, I think, I hope I've answered your question in terms of what I'm proud of. So,
no, you've done it. You've done a magnificent job. You really have. You've talked a lot about sort of the pride in the system, what the system is doing well, your career, and more. And you've also given some thoughts that are so clear on leadership, on strategy, planning, budgeting, operations. What I'd love to do, Reese, is you're a great pleasure to visit with. I'd love to have you on again whenever I can get you back on to talk more about leadership and priorities and how you set those leadership and how you set those priorities so that you stay clear-headed through crisis, which you've done. I also love you've got the old-fashioned career story where willing to travel to take on bigger and bigger responsibilities, bigger and bigger challenges, And that's less and less the case in today's world. And it's a magnificent story of leadership and growth and desire to make a difference. So it is a great pleasure to visit with you today, Reese. And we're thrilled to have you on, and we'd love to have you on as soon as we can get you back on to talk a little bit more about leadership and priorities and more.
That'd be great. And, I do want at some point also to give that career advice to emerging leaders, because you're touching upon it. You know, don't be afraid to put yourself in tough situations.
And we'll talk about that more. We'll get you on literally as soon as we can again.
Yeah, that's where you really grow as a leader, is through adversity. So I look forward to talking about those things too.
Thank you very much.